OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that bold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Connacht are on the verge of history. We can almost call it. 43 seconds left. There's no coming back from this for Leinster. The scenes in Edinburgh tonight. The scenes in Galway tomorrow. There's never been anything like this in the sport of rugby in the west of Ireland. 131 years of it. We haven't seen anything like this. No one will be left with a dry eye in this stadium. It's all over. Connacht are Guinness Pro 12 champions. They have done it in the most spectacular of fashion. Tiernan O'Halloran, Nia Adiolokan and Matt Healy get the tries. And the final score is Connacht 20, Leinster 10.
Yeah, great stuff there from Galway FM's Rob Murphy commentating on the Pro 12 final from 2016 now, when Connacht beat Leinster by 20 points to 10 to win the Pro 12 title at Murrayfield. I'm joined by a man who was very much front and centre that day. John Muldoon is with us on the line. Evening, John.
Evening, everybody.
How are you keeping?
Yeah, all good. It's a strange time we're in at the moment, but I came back to Galway 7 weeks ago, or sorry, 10 weeks ago tonight for what was supposed to be 4 days with the small hand luggage for my wife, my little young fella and myself, and we've been here 10 weeks, so it's
wow.
It's interesting.
Well, there's worse places to be stuck. At least you're home.
Absolutely, yeah. It could be a lot worse, yeah. So small graces and all that.
We'll talk about what's going on at the moment then, and Bristol and the future of the Gallagher Premiership, which is still very much up in the air, it seems, in a moment. But just going back there, it's so brilliant to listen to still. It's almost too soon to get nostalgic about it, considering it is only 4 years ago. But it's funny, when I think about Connacht rugby and the history of Connacht rugby over the last sort of 20 years, so much of it you think of the near misses and the darkness and the wet and the wind and the rain. Yet everything about that season, it always felt like the sun was shining.
Yeah, the sun was shining because everyone was happy. Isn't that the way it is? It's obviously the sports ground. It is wet and it does get some dark and dreary days. But you've got to be able to come to the sports ground. You've got to be able to play in those conditions. I think there was obviously a perception for a good few years before that we liked those conditions, but that wasn't the way. And it wasn't just when Pat arrived that changed. That was the way Eric tried to play the game as well. And we were looking at forecasts kind of going, oh crap, it's going to be raining again at the weekend, but you just have to get on with it. And I think you can look at it two ways. You either look at it going, oh, it's going to be a tough night for us and for them, but at least we know these conditions, we're used to them. While we don't want them, we can still play in these conditions. And I think we showed that year especially that you don't need. Obviously, it's nicer having good conditions, but you can still play rugby to a certain point if they're not that bad.
Would you have almost had a wet weather game plan then?
We had, yeah. We had certain things. Obviously, I would say 99% of the time in the sports ground, the wind and rain goes a certain direction. I remember playing against Leinster once, and Luke McGrath was quite young and playing at nine, and he tried to box kick the ball and he got taken off after about 45 minutes, and they brought on Owen Redden. It was probably a learning curve for Luke, but he tried a couple of times, and I think the ball ended up behind him. Redzer came on, tried one kick, ended up behind him, and they gave up the kicking plan. And there's certainly a way to play that kind of rugby and not to kick high and to keep the ball low and obviously keep it towards the touchline so that you're not giving an advantage to a an attacking winger or attacking fullback. So yeah, there is definitely game plans, and with Pat, as you can imagine, there was no stone unturned, and we had certain games that we changed. And if people remember back, we played Glasgow, and then we played Glasgow again 2 weeks later, and we changed our game plan completely for the semi-final. The other way around, we changed it for the quarterfinal. We kicked loads. And that's not a quarterfinal. I refer to it sometimes as a quarterfinal. It felt like that.
Yeah.
But we kicked loads that game, and we caught them by surprise.
Talk about Pat then, because you're still obviously working with Pat Lam at Bristol. What's your first memory of meeting him?
He got introduced to us. Obviously, I knew who Pat was. I knew his caliber for playing, and obviously he had a turbulent enough time in New Zealand towards the end when he was coaching. But Pat arrived, I think it was about April time. He got introduced to the squad, and we got told that he was going to come watch a bit of training, might come to a game or two, but wasn't going to have a hands-on appointment at that stage, and just wanted to get to know people before obviously his reign took over. And the first game, which Pat often refers to, the first game that he watched was Connacht versus Edinburgh in Edinburgh, and I started number 7, and Pat put a stroke through me and said, yeah, he's gone. So great start to our relationship.
And so you know that now. What was the conversation like after that game then against Edinburgh, when Pat Lam is talking to you about your performance and he's obviously having doubts in his head about what you can contribute? Like, are you aware straight away that you've got a bit of a fight in your hands here?
I think I met him briefly a couple of weeks later, and because obviously he was coming and going, but he wasn't trying to step on anyone's toes. But I think we had a bit of a slag going, I'm definitely not a number 7. I think I said to him, if he took me on in a sprint, he might possibly win. But we were just having a bit of fun and jovial about this, and he just asked me what position I preferred. I said number 8, and then we talked a little bit about that, and we kind of left it at that. But it was kind of more of a passing comment and a passing kind of conversation. We met in a leadership role a couple of weeks later, and we probably had more of a chat about the team as opposed to myself individually. But you could tell Pat was very driven and obviously very smart in what he did, and he I thought it was quite clever what he did. He came over early to make sure he got to know everyone so he could hit the ground running, because he knew he wanted to change things, and he knew he had a lot of work to do to get to that what he wanted to do. So it was clever by Pat, break down the barriers of getting to know someone before you actually kick off the season. So it was quite smart.
I know you touch on there, as the season goes on, there's various different game plans for different opponents and different big games. But so often maybe a style of play can get associated with an area. When I talk about the weather, at times maybe it's almost suited that Connacht was seen as quite a rugged side as well, full of grit and determination and heartbreaking near misses. Whereas actually, like, there's another side of Galway, which is an incredibly creative side of Galway as well, that sort of felt Pat Lam tapped into that side of things that from a sporting point of view maybe hadn't been before. That actually the creative side, the expansive side, the exciting side was actually something that the supporters were ready to lap up.
Yeah, I think you've hit a couple of good points there. I think Galway is very creative, and I suppose there's an old saying in Galway that it's... It takes away your
graveyard of ambition.
Your ambition. So that is because a lot of people come here and don't want to leave, and obviously opportunities might be nicer elsewhere, but they decide to leave. And I think I've said this a couple of times before in broadcasts and stuff, that I think it takes someone who doesn't understand the place to come in and realize how special Galway is and how special Connacht is. And there is a ruggedness to the landscape, but there's also to that ruggedness there's a beauty there. And I'm not going to get too philosophical, but I think Pat came in and realized, geez, there's there's an awful lot good about this place. The supporters come out regardless of the rain conditions, if it's sunny. There's a lot of obviously tough people here who've gone through tough times, and there's a lot of goodwill and wanting to see, as you said, wanting to embrace a different game plan. So I think he saw that, instilled probably what we not took for granted, but we kind of just associated with it, and he made it clear to us that this isn't the norm. This isn't what goes on everywhere. So he made, I suppose, a few people stand up and take notice that this was a very special place if you didn't know it already. And I think that Pat was quite clever. He used that to get us to not let down our parish and our community and everything that goes with it. So it was a good piece of masterclass by Pat.
And when you look at the squad now that was there that season, it was an incredibly talented squad. And I don't know if the coach makes the players or the players make the coach, but clearly you'd a very powerful pack. But you look at that back line as well. AJ McGinty is the season of his life alongside Kieran Marmion and the two out halves. Then you have Robbie Henshaw and Bundy Aki setting the place alive in centre. Matt Healy and Nii Adeyemi-Olokun, incredible form in the wings. Tiernan O'Halloran, brilliant at full back. That was a side that, while they may have been the underdogs, when you look at it now, was a side well capable of achieving a lot of things.
Yeah, I think Eric put in a lot of groundwork and built up a young team. And some might say that Pat inherited a win-win situation. A young team that was getting better all the time, and expectations and probably ambitions were quite low. But I think, obviously, you have to compliment Eric and what he did, but also you have to compliment Pat and pulling it all together. And you talked about AJ McGinty. AJ was playing in the World Cup. No one really knew too much about him unless you were a stalwart of watching AIL and knew all about American rugby. You wouldn't have known who AJ was. And that was a big, obviously, acquisition to make in terms of a big call. And AJ turned out to be excellent, and I've caught up with AJ every time we've played Sale, and we reminisce and sit and have a coffee, and he's gone from strength to strength. He's obviously had a few injury issues, but he's doing really well over there, and he's turned out to be an exceptional player. He still is and remains probably the best defending 10 I've ever played with. He's exceptionally good in defence, real good talker, and more importantly, a very, very brave man.
The final then, the game against Leinster, who were obviously such strong favourites, start brilliantly, Leinster clawed away back, and there's 10 points in it, I think, with 10 minutes left. And again, Connacht have played just some sensational rugby, and the quality of some of the tries they had scored to put themselves in that position. Like, at any stage during the game, is the history of the near misses and the 84th minute defeats, is that ever in your head, or does this just feel different that season, that actually, even though it is Leinster and that star-studded side, that you're now more than a match for them, and actually this is sort of your destiny to go and do this?
I don't think... I've been fortunate enough to play in some really good teams, and not always in rugby. And I was reminiscing about a hurling game I was involved in with a player on the opposition side, where we were, I think, 4 or 5 points up with a couple of minutes to go in a hurling match, and we were down by 4 coming into injury time, and we ended up winning by 4. And sometimes you play in games, and the Pro 12 final was similar, where I never actually felt like we'd lose. I felt that we were in a really good position, like mentally, physically. We were starting to, probably that was the only... deciding factor, but the only concern was that we'd played quite a lot of rugby together. We were starting to fatigue a bit, and I do think if we had another 2 or 3 games, because maybe we didn't have as big a squad as other people, and a lot of lads were going to the well every week, we were starting to fatigue a bit, and that was probably the only concern with 10 minutes to go, is, geez, have we got the legs to do this? But mentally and I suppose... more importantly, belief wise, we believed, and I don't think I certainly didn't feel it off anybody with 10-20 minutes to go that we were going to lose the game.
There's lots of players who have long careers at clubs and have great days, and you can enjoy the journey and enjoy the victories along the way, but lots of great players end their careers without a medal. Does that day change the way you look back on your time with Connacht? I'm sure you loved so much of it, but having that day where it all came together and you came away with that winner's medal. Does it change things at all?
It does, yeah. It certainly does. Look, sport can be... It can be the best game in the world to play, or any game can be the best game, whatever your sport is. But it can be a cruel mistress at times. And you have memories, and I have friends and memories that will be with me for the rest of my life. But when you think about that day and the build up and the aftermath and everything, that is special. And I suppose the fact that we were underdogs for quite a long time, and everything, the history, I don't need to go into it, but the history of it was very, very special. At the time, I think the night before, I got a couple of minutes to myself the night before, and I just prepping for my own thoughts and what I was going to say, even though trying to keep a lid on things, you're trying to not get too emotional the night before with yourself, not get too emotional on the pitch, because you basically don't need to say anything in a game like that. But I started to think back of some of the players that had gone in the past, and that to me made me fortunate. And that's what I said to some of the lads the morning of the game, that a lot of really good people had worn the jersey and had got nothing back in terms of obviously they've got a lot back out of it, and they'll have lasting memories and great memories. But we were on a stage where we could actually win something, and that we were going out there for a lot more people than just us, and to look forward to it, but not let the occasion get to us. And that was the big thing. Yes, it was new to us, but we deserve to be there, and just keep the messages simple for the lads, and not get too emotional. I probably say that to myself more than any of the rest of them.
How much prep would you have put into team talks? Would you have always taken a couple of minutes the night before a game to try and, as you say, get that emotional intensity quite right? Some days I'd imagine where you did want to be quite emotional, and you probably felt players needed that G up, whereas there's other days, like when you're in a big final where everyone knows what it means, that you just need to get that balance right. Would you spend a lot of time thinking and reminiscing of when you were younger and good team talks you would have heard, or when you're around the international squad and you would have heard good team talks as well? Would you spend a lot of time thinking about it?
Yeah, you do. I would spend more time two nights before, because you do the big talk the day before. You do a captain's run, and that's when you do the big chat the day of the game. If you're trying to motivate people 10 minutes, 5 minutes before the game, obviously you do say a few words, and at halftime everything you said might be gone out the window at that stage. But a lot of the conversation will be the day before or the night before, if you have a meeting in the hotel or whatever the case may be, the circumstances. But a lot of it will go into that. And I think the key thing, which Craig Clark was an excellent captain when he came to Connacht, the key thing he taught me, and we had quite a lot of dialogue about, was feeling the group out for the week and seeing what was missed, and what maybe some things that we didn't write near, or we didn't get a chance to touch on, and just feeling that, I suppose, energy from the group, and trying to preempt something that might happen, or something that can, like, has maybe glossed over slightly. But also, if it's been a, let's just say that it's been a tough week, and there might be a bit of a scrap in training, you might keep the emotional energy out of your team talk, or if there's a couple of, we'll say, changes on the team and there's a few lads getting an opportunity, you might just think about your, I suppose, what you're going to say and how you're going to say that, not calling someone out, but just highlighting the importance of the game and the importance of sticking as a team and doing your role right for the team. Because obviously, you know, there might be 5-6 players coming into the team that week. They all want to impress, they all want to play well, but it's not about them, it's about the team. And you just might structure your talk about that, saying it's important that we function well as a team, we do our roles, we get set, etc., etc. I'm not going to go into big detail, but that's the kind of process you go through your head, and you think what's coming here. And as I said, for a final, you don't need to have a huge amount, because emotional energy is going to be there, but you just still need to touch on one or two things.
In your current role then as coach with the Bristol Bears, when you're talking to players, is it far less emotional, or do you still have times where actually, I presume during the week it's clearly far less emotional and far more based on the tactical side of the game, But around match day, is there still a part of you that's getting really into it and getting that across to the players, or is that just not part of your job now?
Obviously you try and, like, as a defence coach, you try and be energetic, you try and motivate people, you try and push them to want to do better. I think I did have a moment this year where I went in with all the best plans to say X, Y, and Z, and that went out the window after about, I say, a minute in there, when I heard one or two lads talking and doing whatever, and whatever plan I had to say something kind of went out the window. The structure of how I was going to say it went out the window. I got my points across, but in a way...
So what? You walk into a dressing room and maybe a couple of people are a bit too relaxed?
No, we weren't playing well, and our defence wasn't going pretty well, and I knew what I wanted to say. I had a couple of points to say it, but on the way in, I heard a couple of little shitty excuses, and I didn't like it. And then there was one or two kind of people chatting in the corner when one of the coaches was talking, and then there was a bit of dialogue between a coach and one of the players back about needing to do something, and I just started getting more and more angry. And the tone of my voice changed dramatically. But look, it's that doesn't work every day, and you've got to be conscious that was a one-off, and it happened in the heat of the moment. And about 5 minutes later, I walked outside onto the pitch, and one of the subs ran by me, gave me a kick in the ass, and just started laughing and goes, "I love that." And I just laughed at him. I just said, "That won't work every week." And he just started laughing. He goes, "Well, it'll work this week."
Yeah.
And thankfully, we won the game. So it wasn't from our defense, but we managed to win the game. But you get away with days like that.
And do you park then? So you've come back, you've won the game, and what you've said is you can take some credit for it. It's worked. But the excuses you've heard walking into the dressing room, the little conversation that's going off, like, have you forgotten about that then by the time you get home? Or when you're going into training on Monday morning, are you bringing this up again, that, like, this is completely unacceptable for what we're trying to achieve here?
Yeah, obviously I didn't have to say it. It was talked about after the game. It was talked about not being on and not being ready to go and not performing to our ability, and then it was spoke about again on Monday morning. Pat spoke about it. So look, obviously you've got to get back, you've got to talk to the lads and see, well, why didn't we perform well? You have to show video back up at what you say, and then you speak to individuals and you just scratch the plate and go again, or scratch the slate I should say, and go again. And you got to get better. And to be fair, we did get better. It was, you just have those days sometimes, and you either get away with it or you don't. But if you've got a chance at half time, you can come in, collect yourself, speak about it, and hopefully make it right. And some days you can change those days, and other days you can't. And you just got to sometimes just park it, or not park it, but you obviously have to fix it, and then just park it and move on and try and make sure you get better the following week. Because if you make the same mistakes the next week, then you're fundamentally doing a lot of things wrong. And that's the key thing. As long as you improve on those, but also make sure that in 2-3 weeks' time, you're still improving. It's not just a spike up and then a big spike back down. You can't have a roller coaster.
When you speak about Pat and his initial arrival to Galway and to Connacht, and the, I guess, emotional intelligence he has for understanding people, and also his real sense of place, it was really appropriate for Connacht, I'd imagine, at that time. And Bristol are a club as well with no great history of success at the very highest level. Did he approach it from the way you saw and have been close by with him at Bristol in a very similar way, or have you seen him actually approach Bristol quite differently to how he approached Connacht?
There are similarities, definitely. But yes, Pat has changed. Pat has developed and evolved with how things are going. It's obviously different competition. Relegation is a huge factor in it. But ultimately, Pat still has a lot of the same philosophies and wants to play the game a lot of the same way. But he has developed, he has changed. Even since last year, if people are watching the Bristol Bears playing, they'll have noticed there are changes in our game. But ultimately, you can't stay still. You've got to keep evolving. You've got to keep moving forward. And while a lot of some of the taglines are very familiar between Connacht in the old days and where we are now, there are there are similarities, and I can't say that they're not, but no, look, it's they're very, as a club and as a place to live and to stay, it's very, very similar to Galway. So I'm blessed in that way as well.
It had obviously been going well also following on from the promotion, but third in the Premiership when things had to wrap up, Exeter leading the way, 7 points ahead, and then Salem 40 points, Bristol and 38 points. Obviously, all that had gone on with Saracens sees them right down the bottom, and they're going to be relegated one way or another. Is it an enjoyable league to be involved in? Like, is it very similar to a Pro 14, or is the standard different? Is the intensity different?
It is a little bit different, yeah. Obviously, relegation has a huge part to play. I said this to a few of my friends last year. At the start of last season, just into the Premiership, Jay Keenan, who obviously Connacht people will know, joined the club. He had a shoulder injury and got a little bit of a delay coming back from the shoulder injury. And we also had a number seven called Dan Thomas, who was coming back from an ACL. So we had a young lad, next cab off the rack. And you're standing there going, we're about to start a Premiership with a young kid with two sevens who potentially could be in a bit of trouble. So thankfully, we didn't have the budget spent, but I suppose the difference is if that was Connacht, we'd have gone with that young fella and given him the opportunity to play. But because of relegation, we felt we had to get George Smith in, because I suppose the fear of not...
Financially, knowing, it'd be catastrophic, yeah.
Yes, fear of not knowing how good that young fella could be. So in a way, relegation does have a massive impact on young players getting game time, but also just that fear of going down is huge. But that's probably one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is this year we played Zebra, who obviously I know very well, but it's quite funny. You're watching games in the Premiership, you're looking at games, teams go 9-10 points up, they'll kick their points, take their 13-14 points up, and vice versa. Teams go Zebra, I'm watching the games, they go 9-10 points behind, there's an option of 3 points, they don't take it, they run the ball from their own goal line, they might mess that up, and then suddenly they're now 17 points behind, and I'm thinking, why didn't they take their 3 points, why didn't they be a little bit more cautious in what they were doing? But I suppose that's the difference between relegation and sometimes, while the games can be a little bit more open in the Pro 12, Pro 14, the consequences in the Premiership are huge. And by losing by 7 points and getting your extra bonus point might make a huge difference. So you see teams who were a little bit more cautious about going to the corner and I suppose taking their points and building up that league. So there is a little bit more tactics involved, and I think when you see the way how England play, a little bit more kicking as well, you understand that is coming a little bit from the Premiership, and
yeah,
probably how to win and how to close out games is a little bit more prevalent in the Premiership. If that all makes sense.
Yeah, no, total. And, well, we don't know what's going to happen now, I guess. Have you any sense? I know the latest today is that it's another 2 weeks before teams can go back to training, and they haven't decided on a return date. Like Jordan Murphy saying, he's the director of rugby at Leicester, that he feels they need 2 months to get ready for
a new season. Yeah.
Have you any idea of what's going to happen?
None at all. We have about 10 different plans that we were waiting to get ready, and one of them is gone already. I think the second one is about to go based on today's announcement. So we're just making plans, hoping. Like, obviously, for people listening in, the big factor is that obviously players and coaches' contracts are up in 10 days and in 40 odd days. So it's a very weird situation. A couple of days ago or a couple of weeks ago, there was talk of us starting back the Premiership at the end of June, and potentially you could have been in a scenario where Kyle Sinclair could have been playing against Bristol Bears on the Saturday, and on the Monday he could have been training with us, because obviously he signed for us next season. So it's absolutely mental. We have one or two coaches that are leaving us. They could be coaching in our office on the Friday and gone on the Monday to a different club. So
God knows,
it's a bit out there at the moment. But look, the one thing I'm not sure about the 8 weeks that Jordan Murphy's talking about, but one thing's for sure is it's not like football where you can just turn around and say, well, we've had 10 weeks off, let's play in 3 weeks' time. That's not possible in rugby. So you'll have to get at least 4 weeks of training in and just get people back. It is difficult. The boys are training as much as they can on their own. That's all well and good. Moving, hitting bodies, moving away from bodies, all that takes a bit of time just for that muscle memory to come back, and you can't expect lads to be rushed back in. The NFL did that a couple of years ago when there was a dispute about money rights and pay from the TV, and the statistics are frightening, the amount of people that tore Achilles, done ACLs. So we don't need that situation coming through where people are getting injured for no reason. So we just got to be smart in how we do it.
You've been brilliant with your time, John. We've had a lot of texts coming in wishing you well, and a lot of people reminiscing about the good days with Connacht. And also Pat, who was asking about your horse that won the Ulster Derby last year. What's the name of the horse?
Pat Lamb. he's gone. We sold him. So
for a profit?
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Good man.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's gone. So it's on to something new. But
Have you got to something new yet?
Yeah, they're getting ready to go. It's just obviously difficult for everyone in racing and for every sport. But thankfully, the government have come good for them, and they're back on the 8th of June. And I was just looking through a few fixtures there, but unfortunately, I do like a day out of the races. But I missed Galway last year for the first time in 20-something years, so or maybe even 30 years. But so it's... unfortunately, I don't think I'll be getting to the races anytime soon.
No, as Pat said, what are your thoughts on the Galway races happening behind closed doors? The pints at home won't quite taste the same. They definitely won't taste the same as they do at 2 in the morning on Shop Street on the Thursday night. I can assure you of that. They probably taste a bit better, actually.
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll have a pub open. We can go and watch it or do something. At least that would take a little bit of the sting away. But it's a difficult time for everyone in business and in... just in general, it's tough going, but thankfully I'm close to the sea here in Galway and I can go for a walk. I've only braved getting in once. It's a bit too cold for me still. So
no. Cold! It was 22 degrees yesterday.
Geez. That was in Dublin. This is Galway, remember.
-4. John, well, hopefully you get back to your new home as well at some stage and get back to Bristol and enjoy the time back in Galway while you have it. Great to talk to you as always.
Cheers. Thank you.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.